This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is an audio engineer who has toured with artists such as Run the Jewels, Lettuce, and Baby Keem. In this episode, we discuss his path from unpaid intern to touring pro, the things he learned from facing the COVID industry shutdown, the importance of starting the conversation on mental health in your community, as well as some other great nuggets around resilience and taking risks. Here is my conversation with Tomas Wolf. Tomas, how are you? It's so good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited to hear about where you've come from, but we met at Riot Fest recently, which was really cool. You were there with our friend Matt, right?
Yeah. Love Matt.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell me, how did you start your career in the industry to begin with? Was it something you always wanted to do since you were young, or did it actually just kind of happen, like a lot of people fall into the industry?
I definitely fell into it. Matt actually plays a huge part in my story, but I'll get to that. Basically, I was around music my whole life. I used to like DJ and stuff like that back in the 90s, and like we'd throw parties and stuff like that and like kind of build our own little sound systems, really shitty, you know. So I was always around it, but I didn't think I could make a career out of live sound. So after the years of doing that, I kind of fell out of that scene. And I was like heavy into drinking and stuff like that and doing drugs. So I got sober, kind of got away from the party scene. And I had a job as a bike messenger, which was a cool job, but, you know, it wasn't a career. It wasn't going anywhere. It didn't pay a lot of money. And I was like, you know what? I want to like do something in music. So I always wanted to like maybe be a recording engineer in the studio. And at that time, I had been through the Navy, and there they have a program called the GI Bill, which gives you money for college. And around that time, the structure of that program had changed. So they'd actually, before they would just give you the money for tuition, but now they gave you money kind of like a per diem to live off of on top of going to school. So I was like, oh, that's cool. I could just go to school, get paid. So I looked for a recording school. I looked at a couple of different ones, but landed on a program called the LA Recording School. And it was like a 9-month program. And it kind of touched on all the different aspects of sound. And then when I got to like the live sound class, I was like, oh, this is like an actual job. Like, this is cool. I can see myself doing this. And I ended up taking, it was just the one class. A buddy, a classmate of mine from that school, played in a band. They were playing the Troubadour. He's like, come to my show. I was like, cool. They had a front of house guy, this guy named Alex Schneiderman. I met him. I'm like, hey, like, I'm really interested in live sound. Can I shadow you? And he was like, yeah, sure. You can shadow me. So I shadowed him at the Troubadour. And I was just kind of like bitten by the bug, like totally obsessed after that, you know. They had a show at the Vibe Room the following day. I'm like, yo, like, can I come with you? Like, shadow you? And he was kind of like, yeah, like, didn't really want to, but I was like so adamant because like at the Vibe Room, especially, it's where you mix, you have to like climb up a ladder into an attic, and only like two people can like fit up there. So I'm like, oh, please, like, let me come, you know, chat with you, like, oh, won't be in your way, blah, blah, blah. So I get there, and lo and behold, Matt's there. He's the production manager. So I meet Matt, and I'm like, yo, like, can I intern here at the Viper Room? He's like, yeah, you can intern here. But he's like, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to hire you. And he's like, I'm not going to pay you. I was like, I don't care. He's like, I'll come in. I'll work for free. You don't have to hire me. Like, I don't care. And that kind of just started my career from that day on. Like, I was at the Viper Room. I had a day job, so I'd work in the morning, and then I'd go to the Viper Room at night, and I would try to be there. Like, if they're open 7 days a week, I'd be there 7 days a week. And I was just kind of cracked out on live sound, I guess you could say, like totally obsessed, you know. And that's kind of like where it all started.
Was that experience like the first time that like you got bit by the bug, like for real, and you actually were like, I'm going to find a way to actually make this happen and follow through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a trip because like, I didn't know you could really like make that much money at Live Sound. And I was like, oh, I should probably do like, cause they had some like audio editing for movies, stuff like that. And like those dudes made a lot of money, but there's something about Live Sound that it just sparked like a passion in me. I was like, I don't care how much money I make. Like, this is what I want to do. And meeting Matt and all those dudes, like, it's like the people I want to be around and stuff like that. So, yeah. And I have like a very kind of obsessive mentality. So once I'm like into something, it's like all I can do or think about. So that really started like the obsession of this whole thing. And it's still going today.
Yeah. It's like you found your people, and then you also found like an actual day-to-day thing that you could do.
Yep.
That you actually enjoyed. What are some of the things that you noticed were so different and you were so attracted to?
I think just being in like the club or concert environment, it was just, it's like a fast paced environment, which I really liked. Getting to see like so much music. It's like kind of hard to explain, but it was like a feeling. Like it was just something I could see myself doing for a long time. Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain, but I just kind of like got this feeling like in my stomach, like this is where I need to be. This is what I want to do. And it's very like unconventional, which I like. I could never, you know, work like just a regular job and feel satisfied. So this was like, it was always something new. Like every day is different. So I really vibe off of all that. And then, yeah, meeting like all the other people in the industry. And like you said, it was like kind of like my people. And it was nice to like look up to these dudes and kind of have like a role model in that sense. You know, people really like showed me a lot of love and shared a lot of experience with me. So that was a good feeling too, you know?
Yeah, it's cool that you got to experience kind of the traditional schooling portion of it, and then took it upon yourself to really kind of be the apprentice on your own terms.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, the day I got the internship, I was like beyond stoked. And I ended up dropping out of school like the next day. I was like, fuck school. Like, I don't need this shit. They weren't teaching a lot of live sound. So I was like, you know, I'm not really like big into school. And I knew like, okay, I'm going to get all my education here. I mean, it was a good experience to go to school, and it got me like in the mindset and like being around like-minded people, which was great, but nothing compares to like boots on the ground and seeing like how it really works, you know?
Yeah. Just doing the thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, I've noticed a really big shift in the way that younger people are becoming more aware of the industry and the fact that you can make a career out of it and how they're introduced to it and the different avenues that are opening up. Now you have programs all over the place where you can start the way people traditionally have, or you can now go to school for it, which is really bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it was never like that. What's your take on that? Have you noticed that stuff?
Absolutely. I think I was at the very beginning of that. When I got into it, live sound wasn't a big focus for schools, but I could definitely see the trend like over the years. And I think a lot has to do with there's more money in the touring sector. Like, that's how artists make their money. You need more bodies to work. The recording engineering is tough because, you know, a lot of people are recording albums in their bedroom. So I think that just coincided with the whole schooling aspect, was that I think there's just a more of a demand for people to work in the touring industry. So I think it's cool. I think it's great. I think there's schools that exist for that. I don't look down on anybody that goes to school, you know, but I know at the end of the day, like, you're going to get, I would suggest just going into an internship and not wasting your money on a school, because you're going to internship anyway when you get out of school, and you're going to save a lot of money, basically. You're going to work for free at some point.
Right. So that's really funny. So the other day I was at Jimmy John's, like, I dropped by, and I used to be a high school teacher, and I saw one of my students.
Kidding. Oh, no.
And so I saw one of my students, I was like, hey, like, what's up? How are you? And he's like, oh, you know, and like, his immediate thing was like, well, I'm taking a couple classes, like, yeah, kind of like talking to his teacher. Like, it's like, don't worry. I'm like, I'm going to college.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm definitely not the person who would like push you into something that you're not ready for.
Yeah.
At all.
Absolutely.
I totally see the value and, like, you know, having that experience of like exploring and like seeing what you're actually into. Cause you might get the opportunity to shadow someone and decide like, hey, this actually is not something that I want to pursue. And you saved yourself thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. But I'm not against school either. You know, like, it could be a good thing, because you could also sample a bunch of different careers within that industry and maybe find something you like. But for me personally, once I started interning, I was like, okay, I don't need to go back to class. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, at the time it was at the, you know, the very beginning. And like now, the reason I'm even hearing about these programs and things, it's because I know people who are veterans in the industry who are now going in to talk to students, and like, they're asking them to lead classes and things like that. Yeah. And they're people who like didn't get degrees.
Yeah.
So it's a funny dynamic that we're seeing now, because it's like the people who know what the hell they're doing actually never had formal training.
Yeah. Yeah. That is funny.
Yeah. It's wild. So tell me, when you were kind of like enamored with the industry and you were like, okay, this is what I want to do, and you first got on the road, what was that like?
So before I got on the road, I started working at the Viper Room. And then I moved down to the Roxy and was interning there. Eventually got hired both at the Roxy and the Viper Room. So I was doing that. I was interning at another audio provider called US Audio. So I was learning a little bit more about like actually setting up PAs, stuff like that. And then I got introduced to a stage manager, this guy, Sean Sandoval, through a buddy of mine. And he got me like a lot of stagehand gigs, which was another great way to like work bigger shows. So I started like doing the stagehand stuff for all the Golden Voice venues, and I was able to meet all the audio guys, and then slowly move my way up to being like a house audio guy for the Fonda and Club Novo and El Rey, stuff like that. And like, I was doing pretty well. Like, I was working 6 days a week. I would still do gigs for free, you know what I mean, on top of that, just to get more experience, more exposure. And I always wanted to get on the road. But at that point, I was like pretty happy because I was constantly working. And my friend, Andrew Mishko, he's a manager now, but he used to be a sound guy and also a tour manager. And he hit me up one day. He's like, look, somebody hit me up to go out on the road, but it's like no money. So he's like, if you want to do it, I'll put you in for it. I'm like, it was like no money. It was like $100 a day, $50 a day for day offs or for travel days, no per diem. And it would have been like driving the whole time, tour managing, merch, sound. I was like, man, I don't know. You know, like I've got a good thing going. He's like, dude, he's like, you want to fucking do this? Like, you got to fucking like just take the leap and like risk like the jobs you have now. It's like, all right, fuck it. You know, like you're right. So I ended up meeting with this band's manager and they flew me out like a few days later to Dallas. I guess they had fired the other guy. They needed somebody. So yeah, they flew me out to Dallas at a little club called Trees. It was this band Io Echo and they're opening up for a band called Joy Formidable. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. Their TM front of house is this guy, Andy. And I learned so much from that guy. He was such a badass. You know, he's a little like rough around the edges, which I liked. And, you know, I just kept my mouth shut and tried not to get in the headliner's way and learn everything I could. And then I've been on the road pretty much ever since then. It just kind of all snowballed. I just kept getting more gigs. And then that became the majority of my career.
It's cool how you mention leaving the security of like something you had already established, like you had worked to have this security where you have constant work, you're at home, you know what to expect, and then giving all of it up, not knowing if this is going to work out, and like the immediate return is super small.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was that something that was scary to you?
It definitely was. It definitely was scary. But it didn't take much convincing from my friend. He's like, dude, you've been begging me to tour. Like, this is how you're going to do it. He's like, you got to take the risk, you know, without risk, there's no reward. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. You know? So, you know, as part of the adventure is just like saying, fuck it really. And going into a door, you don't know if it's going to open or not. But it was a huge life lesson for me. Like, yeah, I got to remember, like, everything's going to work out in the end eventually. And even if it doesn't work out, it'll still work out, you know?
And is that something that you had to really reconnect with, like, over this past couple years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll speak for myself, but I definitely, you know, getting complacent and comfortable. I had a real problem with like kind of like a feast and famine mentality. So I'd pretty much take any gig that was offered to me, even if it was something I knew I wouldn't be like super happy with. I was like, oh, I gotta work, you know, like I'm never gonna work again if I don't take this gig. So the last couple years, you know, through COVID and coming back to the gig, I've realized like, okay, I need to like take a step back and like take more risks. You know what I mean? Like not take everything that's just thrown in front of me and just kind of trust the process. Like I'm going to get work. And if I want to advance my career, like I need to be more picky and choosy, you know, the gigs I take and stuff like that. But it always creeps back in my mind, like, dude, you're not going to work. You better fucking take this gig, you know? So it's always a back and forth, but I think COVID definitely helped me realize like, well, you're going to be all right, no matter what. If there's no industry or there is an industry, like you're going to survive. So, you know, be a little smarter on how you move through this, you know?
Yeah, I think that's something that definitely has come up. You know, it's that whole being in the swing of things and then just not taking the time to really think whether it's worth the investment. Like, is the time I'm putting in really worth it in the long run? Like, are these little hits actually getting me somewhere? You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're just like spinning your wheels.
Yeah.
And not really taking the time to really plan ahead and to really like value yourself and value, you know, what it is that you've grown to do. Because I mean, think of all of the things that you did up until that point. Like, those are valuable things. You worked for free, you learned, you made connections, you gave yourself value. And so you, I guess you were put in a place where like you had to recognize that that value was there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and I can see it from the outside. And I mean, obviously, like, I don't know you too much, right, but I think it is a kind of like a common theme that's been happening. You know, the whole, is this job going to be worth it for me? Do I have to take this? Am I going to actually like weigh the benefit, like the pros and cons before I say yes?
Yeah.
Is that something that you think about a lot now?
I do. Yeah. It's a trip because I could be my own worst enemy and also my biggest cheerleader at the same time. So either I'm like, yeah, I'm the shit, you know, like I'm so good at this. And then other days, like, man, I'm the worst fucking front of house guy there is. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a battle in my mind always, like with my ego, you know, either like, dude, you better take this because no one else is going to hire you. Or, you know, like, nah, I think you're a little bit better than this and you can get a better job. Or so it's a constant battle, definitely. You know what I mean? But I've been feeling pretty good lately, so that's good. Not too down on myself, you know what I mean? Just being back in the industry right now, it kind of reminds me of when I first started. I've kind of got that fire and that hunger again, you know? So I'm just super grateful to have that feeling. Because towards the end, before coronavirus, I was pretty burnt out. I was definitely burning the candle at both ends and not very grateful. So having all that time off and coming back, like, it's kind of like a new lease on this life. And my perspective definitely has changed. So it's been good. It's been good. I'm stoked.
Have you thought about some of the things that you would have done differently or that now you would do differently?
Yeah. I think mental health is something I've definitely thought about a lot. And I would just get stuck in these cycles on the road, not taking care of myself and like just all about work. And now I'm trying to take the approach, like, just take it a little slower, be better to myself, eat better, maybe exercise, or just to take that time to keep myself healthy. Because without that, I'm not going to be happy at what I'm doing. But it's a difficult balance because I'm definitely obsessive. So I could just keep going and going and going and not think about it. I've been kind of just trying to slow it down a little bit and to remind myself it's the little things I have to do to keep sane. Maybe waking up a little early and taking that time to like meditate and focus on my day. And because it's like those little things I do, it's not like an immediate return, like you're saying, you know, it's just like I'm slowly building up to have a better headspace. So it's hard to remember that like in the moment, like, dude, slow down, take care of yourself. But it's been working. So I think it's definitely important to, you know, take care of yourself if you're going to be grinding on the road like that, because it can take quite a bit out of you.
What are some of the things that you've had some time to do during the break?
Well, it was pretty rough. Like the first 6 months, I did not work at all. I definitely got like heavily depressed. Just not knowing when this thing was going to come back was difficult, you know? It was like really hard. I could not find a job. Like I applied everywhere, grocery stores, Amazon. It was like, couldn't find a job. And even if I got one of those jobs, it wasn't like enough to support my family. I tried to like focus on my mental health and more like the spiritual side. So I really got into that, like doing a lot of meditation, going back to therapy, going back to my psychiatrist and like trying to work on a plan to keep me mentally healthy. And then once I started to do that and kind of let go of everything is when stuff started. I was open to for more things to come in my life. So I had some money left over from the military, ended up taking a electrician's course and a plumbing course, and got a job plumbing like shortly after that. And that helped quite a bit, just staying busy and doing something. And I really enjoyed the like plumbing. It was kind of, at the beginning, it definitely gave me the same feeling as sound, you know, like everything. It's like a new task every day. And, you know, just how like my mind works. And, you know, plumbing's has a lot of similarities to sound, like, you know, signal flow and sound, and how like the water flows and plumbing and stuff like that. And it was cool just to learn something else, you know? So yeah, I did that until June, till touring came back. And then I was still dabbling in plumbing, but I think now, I'm full-time back doing sound, which feels good.
It's really cool that you mentioned the reality of you cannot actually start something new and you can't actually welcome new things into your life, especially when they're difficult.
Right.
If you haven't really figured out or at least sought some help.
Absolutely.
With your mental health.
Yeah.
Because there's just too much going on for you to figure anything out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a trip. You can really be your own worst enemy. You know what I mean? Like just like the negativity and all that stuff. It just kind of closes your mind to anything good that could happen. You know what I mean? So definitely it all starts with you and you know, what's going on inside of you. I'm definitely a big believer in that. You know, if I'm not right here, like the outside is not going to be right. And it's all perspective, you know, at the end of the day. So if I'm healthy on the inside, things seem a little better on the outside, and then I'm more open to receiving new things in my life. That's Marty. That's my boy right there.
So you have two dogs?
I've got three.
Three. Oh. Yeah. So who else is part of your family?
So I got two Boston Terriers, Marty and Penny, and then Sal is the pug. He's the new addition. He's like, he's only like 8 months old.
Oh, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And so when you came home, were you on tour and then it stopped, or were you like in between a gap?
I was on tour and it stopped. Yeah.
Who did you come home to, or what did you come home to?
I came home to my wife and to my three dogs, which was awesome. It was so good to come home and have the dogs jump all over me. You know, they're always happy to see me. So
pets, honestly, I read an article it was either a TikTok or it was an actual article.
Yeah.
But they were saying how when you pet a dog, it actually releases serotonin.
Oh, I believe it.
So
believe
it's like,
it.
I'm like, oh, that's why it feels so nice.
Yeah, that's why I have three. I'm a maniac and I want more.
Right. So tell me, how was coming home, you know, to your wife, once you guys realized that the future was not certain anymore?
Yeah.
And you realized that it started affecting your mental health. Do you have open conversations about that?
Yes and no. To be completely honest, I become kind of shut down emotionally. So it was really hard for my wife. I've dealt with the depression, anxiety my whole life. So when it affects me, I kind of just turn inward and I'm just not very open about it. I think a lot of it is just I'm kind of sick of dealing with it and sick of talking about it. So I wish I could be more open. You know, it's probably better for me, but that's just the way my mind works. So it's a difficult situation to be around me, you know, when I'm in that state. And at the same time, I feel like I don't want to put that on anybody else. So I just kind of like bury it on the inside, you know, let it fester in there, which is not, I know it's not the healthy way to go, but it's just kind of the way my mind works. So it was a difficult time for sure. You know, but at the same time, I think I definitely needed that, you know, because I was feeling that way while I was touring, but I was able to, you know, mask it more just by staying busy. So once I had nothing to do, it was like, oh shit, all this stuff's coming back up. I gotta like uncover it and get rid of it, you know? So ultimately definitely a blessing in disguise, you know? But yeah, difficult situation for sure.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I do hear that a lot. I mean, for people with typical 9-to-5s, it's difficult, but you know, when you're gone, you're able to kind of run away from your issues and like
absolutely
put them aside. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you had to,
definitely.
To be home when you had to deal with them.
Yeah. I was like, motherfucker, damn. I was like, damn.
Not what you wanted.
Not what I want to do. I don't want to deal with my mental problems, you know? But sometimes they're just going to, you know, if you don't take care of them, they're going to take care of you. So either it's going to happen either way.
For sure. Well, I mean, for everybody who just had to come home and had to deal with, you know, everyday life, it's like if you had been pushing it off your entire life, like the entire world was forced to like deal with their demons, which is wild.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very crazy. Very crazy.
Did you stay in touch with a lot of your tour family?
Yes and no. I kind of, once I'm in that like state, I've become like very antisocial. I can't like get back to people or like talk on the phone. I do feel bad because, you know, people are going to think, oh, he doesn't like me or, you know, but really it's just, I get into a mental state where I just don't want to talk to anybody. And even like the tour manager for Run the Jewels, actually you interviewed him, Christian Coffey.
Christian's awesome.
I've definitely wanted to give that dude a shout out though, cause he was one like really constant dude, in my life for that. Like he knows I have issues and he would not leave me the fuck alone. And sometimes I need that. So like he couldn't get a hold of me, he ended up like getting a hold of my wife and shit. I was like, damn, you got me. But that dude helped me out a lot during this period. And it's just so heartwarming to have people like that in your life, you know? So that was cool. That was cool. I would still like try to avoid him, but he's persistent, man. And it's good for me. It's good for me. Yeah. Cause the social situations can be difficult for me. I know like a lot of people are surprised to hear that because I seem very social. But yeah, if I'm not like working or in work mode, like I'm very antisocial, kind of social anxiety and stuff like that. It's probably why I don't like hang out a lot, but when I'm at work, it's different. Like I feel normal, if that makes sense.
It really is. It's so nice to hear an example of someone really taking the initiative to just really reach out, even when it's not always welcome.
Yeah.
And you know, these conversations, like I've been having them for a while, for like since 2019, and like people are talking about it more and more and more. And now when we're talking about, you know, going back to work and like, you know, all the tours are going to like for real get going next year and stuff, there's really this need and this openness to supporting each other and like having a point of contact that you can talk to or having some sort of resources and really just making it like an open thing so that it doesn't feel like you're so alone. Is that something that you're seeing in your circle?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, it's cool just to see the conversation about mental health and, people like really looking out for each other. Cause in this industry, it's like, you know, at least for me and my personal bubble, it's just all about getting the job done. It doesn't matter like if you feel like shit or you're depressed or anything. It's just like, go, 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 get the job done at any cost. Even like seeing like all the COVID protocols, and like before you'd get sick, it was like, you just go to work. You know what I mean? Like I'm sure it was an option, but like for my mentality, it was like never an option to like take a day off to like be better. So I think like with all like the COVID protocols, like just seeing like that, like, oh, if you're sick, you need to like step away. Or if you're having like some mental issues, like, you know, like you might need to step away for a little bit. And I've been seeing that a lot, which is cool because people are getting like the help, you know what I mean? And it's not like a dirty word anymore. You know, you're not being a wuss or whatever. It's like, you know, it's definitely, it's cool to see how much more understanding there is for that stuff. You know, makes me feel more comfortable for sure.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of power in really, I mean, what you're doing today, just even sharing your experience and your story, the fact that people are willing to do that, I think is incredibly important, because I think one of the biggest feelings that can be so overwhelming is to feel like you're alone and there's nobody who understands you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, mental disease is a lot like that. Even if like, I mean, obviously like there's multiple people that are oppressed, but once you're in that state of mind, you're like, I'm different. Nobody knows like what I'm going through, you know? So the more people come out and talk about it, it definitely takes away the stigma a bit, which is nice. I like this new world. It's better for sure. It's better.
Yeah,
for
sure. Absolutely. And it's funny. So I started, I got involved with Hope for the Day for suicide prevention education.
Oh, cool.
And there's this analogy that we use, and it's basically like you think of a bottle of soda, mm-hmm. and everything that shakes your bottle is just building up that pressure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we emphasize like that it's important to ask some, you know, like what's shaking your bottle? Like what's going on? Because there's always something that's shaking people's bottles, right? But even just talking about it really helps relieve that pressure. What are some of the things that you use to relieve the pressure when you're feeling like that?
Definitely, I have a few close friends, and talking with them helps relieve that pressure. Like you said, just talking about it kind of takes away the power of it. You know what I mean? Because things could be a lot worse in my own head. And then when they kind of like, they come out and you can kind of see them, and your friend, your homie's like, nah, you're tripping, dude, you know, or whatever. You're like, oh yeah, maybe I am tripping, you know? So that is a huge, huge part. I think the meditation has helped a lot. And having a routine, like I usually get up, have a cup of coffee, do some stretching and some meditation, and having that consistency has seemed to help me quite a bit as well.
Have you been able to maintain like some sort of morning routine when you're on the road?
Yeah, definitely. It's difficult, because I never want to do it. I just want to like get up and go to work. But it's totally doable on the road. It's just easy to not do it. So it's just a bit of like forcing myself to do that. But I know in the long run, it's helping me. So I just try to remember that. It's just so easy to like, fuck it, I'll do it tomorrow. And I still do that, you know, and like a week will go by and I'm feeling stressed, like, oh shit. Yeah. Or like my back's hurting, or it's like, well, dude, you weren't stretching every morning, you know, or you weren't like calming your mind down, you know. I try to stay consistent with that stuff. But I'm also a lazy bastard and I don't want to do anything that's good for myself.
Right. As long as you're self-aware and you recognize
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
First step. Well, you know, it's nice to hear that it is very much possible and doable to maintain some sort of routine, because a lot of the feedback that you get from people in general when it comes to taking care of yourself is like, oh, there's just too much going on. Like, I can't do it. There's always that excuse.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's going to be as prevalent now that more people are kind of like taking it upon themselves to like take care of themselves a little bit? Do you think that peer pressure is going to start leaning the other way?
I hope so. But to be honest, I could see it going both ways. Because even for myself, like once I got back into the grind, it was just so easy to like fuck off like anything that I was doing for myself that was good for me. I think definitely more people are aware of it. But I guess time will tell if more people are sticking with that. And yeah, even for myself, like I have no idea. I'm sure there's going to be months where I'm not doing it and then catching myself feeling like shit. Like, okay, like, yeah, no wonder you feel like shit. You're not taking care of yourself. I guess time will tell, but we'll see. I'm hoping I can to maintain that.
Yeah. Well, that accountability aspect is really, it can be tough. Like if you're joining a new crew that you've never worked with, like,
yeah.
I guess the easy solution to that would be like finding an accountability
partner. Oh yeah.
Finding an accountability partner, right? That you could be like, okay, I'm really trying to do my morning routine. Like I want to go to bed at a certain time. Like,
yeah.
Please keep me accountable.
Yeah.
But when you're with a new crew and maybe you don't know anybody, I guess that's when it can get tough, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, you want to fit in your environment. If everybody's working their ass off and not doing that, you might not feel inclined to do that yourself. But, you know, even if you're working long hours, you can always take. There's always some time you can take for yourself. You know what I mean? Like you've got 24 hours in a day. You can spare some time, even if you're working 20 of those hours, you can spare a half an hour or 15 minutes or something. I think it's important to remember that, like, you have the time to do that, even if you're grinding really hard. You just have to do it, basically, or I have to do it. You know, I'm not speaking for anybody else.
Well, and then, you know, it goes back to that whole, like, being able to value yourself and being able to realize that you're actually investing in a longer career because you're taking care of yourself today, even if it's annoying because maybe you don't want to do it and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely seeing a lot of people are, well, first of all, there's not enough people labor for people like in the touring industry, and the people that are available aren't going out unless the conditions are right. You know, the rate has to be good. You know, the schedule has to be chill. You know, so a lot of people, it looks like a lot of people are putting themselves first, which I think is good, which I think is going to change the industry.
That's been the goal, right? Because I mean, we'll have a lot of conversations about kind of how things should be,
yeah,
and the way that people should be treated and how people should get paid and how you should be open about salaries and all this stuff. And, you know, and how the schedule shouldn't be crazy and how you should get a day off and stuff like that.
Right.
But nothing's really going to happen until you actually like demand it. And
yeah.
I guess that's kind of what's happening. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a trip to see. I think there's also a fine line of demanding too much. You know what I mean? Like you definitely have to work with the industry. I think there's a fair balance in there. Yeah. I think it's definitely a good thing. But I also think maybe not asking too much, you know, like he's got to have some yin and yang to it, I guess. Cause I've talked to managers and like, yeah, I can't find anybody. They want like $1,000 a day. It's like, all right, well maybe lower your expectations a little bit. But then, you know, I think it's still a good thing because it's just going to bring the bottom up higher. There's a lot of good managers out there and there's a lot of shitty managers. And a good manager is, you know, going to want to give you a proper rate and give you the respect. But then you have managers that want the cheapest solution possible. You know, they just look at the numbers. And that usually doesn't work out too well because you get somebody inexperienced, they'll fuck your shit up. Or you get somebody experienced, but you just burn them out and they're going to quit your gig anyway. So you know, I think it's all about just people treating people like they want to be treated. You know what I mean? With respect.
Yeah. Do you think that that's a conversation that might happen a little bit more, but between management and workers?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because it's always been like a weird divide, right? It's like sometimes they don't even share like any information. They're just like, okay, there's a tour. This is the artist. Sometimes they don't even tell you what the artist is. Like, it's always been kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's always a weird disconnect between management and like the touring side. What I am seeing is the position of tour director popping up more, which I think is great because that person's going to be like your liaison between the touring world and management. Usually the tour director is somebody who has experience on the road, so they can really empathize and relate to touring personnel and kind of express that to management. So I think, that's a cool gig for somebody and it helps the industry out. I like seeing that.
That's so funny because Christian is a tour director.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I understand what he does, but it didn't really quite click until this minute.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, so you tour with some people, but you don't tour with all of them.
Yeah.
But you help and then you're consulting and then you're kind of doing this. But that makes so much sense. And I have seen, you know, especially tour managers that have a lot of experience on the road switching over to this title of tour director. And that makes so much sense to have a liaison, somebody who can really work with management and have those conversations, that has the experience and has the knowledge in order to actually help negotiate these things.
Yeah. I didn't get it at first too. I'm like, tour director, like, what the hell is this? But it started to make sense with, you know, to me, just seeing the interaction between that position, management, and the touring personnel, because your tour manager on the road, he's already swamped. You know what I mean? Like, he's so busy and has to focus on the tour and the artists and stuff like that. So I think, you know, having, you know, that position open up is really, I think, helped a lot of touring crew. Because you have somebody that knows what you're going through and has more empathy for you than, you know, management. You know, they just might not get it. They're like, well, why do we have to pay him if he's on a travel day? You know, like, doesn't make sense. You know, the tour director could be like, well, hey, look, like, they're missing other work to be here, blah, 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 or, you know, whatever the case is. It's nice to have someone looking out for the crew and able to, you know, express that to the other side of the artist coin, you know? So it's cool. It's cool to see that position. I see a lot more tour directors popping up. So it's good. Oh, here's Penny. It's Penny.
Oh,
that's Penny.
Little cutie. Hi. Well, that's a long, I mean, it's a long way from like wearing all the hats in a van tour, right? Like,
where
you're like, I'm the tour manager and I've never done this before, but I also have to run sound and I also have to handle this. And I'm also your shoulder to cry on.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I still think it's a great way to get into the industry, though, you know, for bands that can afford multiple positions, even though it was a lot of work. But in the beginning, I was stoked. I was like, fuck it, I'm down. But definitely later in my career, like, I've done a lot of tour manager, front of house, tour manager, monitors. And I'm definitely at a point where, like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, you just want to pick a lane.
I just want to pick a lane.
Be good at what you're good at. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. And I do think there's value in having to wear all the hats, you know, especially if eventually you do want to get into a position where maybe you are a tour director and maybe you're only managing audio people or whatever. Right. You have to know what they're going through. You have to understand what the job entails in order to really be able to do it properly. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I love that. So tell me, what's a piece of advice that you would give somebody who is green, who is bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, has all the highest expectations? What's something you would say to them if they're starting post-COVID?
Yeah. First of all, I would say this is the perfect time to get into this industry because there's such a lack of personnel. There's a lot more opportunity out there. And I would just say, you know, take the risk and go for it. Learn as much as you can. Take, you know, any gig you can. Don't focus on the money. You know, just keep your mouth shut, keep your ears open, and you can, you know, you could definitely be successful in this career. You just kind of have to go for it and give it all that you have. And I guess that's a something you have to consider because you're definitely, you're going to have strained relationships and you're going to sacrifice a lot to do this job. But if you're passionate about it, you can definitely do it. So I would just say have some faith, you know, take risks, work your ass off.
I love it. Thank you so much. It was really great having you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, if there's ever anything I can do to help with whatever, let me know.
Yeah. Same here. Hell yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk soon.
Cool. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Tomas Wolf. 1. Sometimes you just have to take the leap and risk everything for the opportunity of a lifetime, because without risk, there's no reward. 2. Try to internalize that everything's going to work out in the end, and even if it doesn't work out, it'll still work out. 3. Take it a little slower and treat yourself like someone you love. Focus on the little things that keep you grounded. 4. Negativity closes your mind to anything good that can happen. If you're healthy on the inside, the outside seems a little better, and you're open to receiving new things in your life. And 5. Take the initiative and reach out to those you care about. Even if it's not always welcome, it's always worth it. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Tomas a follow on Instagram at Tomas Wolf. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.